unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science!
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to journey number 40 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring Lieutenant Hornblower and the Peculiar Captain. I am your guide on this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Turner, Oregon. It's been a little while since we've heard from Horatio Hornblower, and the last time he was still a midshipman, serving under Captain Pilieu on the HMS Indefatigable. Now we find him serving on the HMS Renown as a lieutenant, and he's beginning to learn that not all ships are the same, nor their captains. So come with me, and let's journey into suspicion and mutiny.
We present Nigel Anthony in The Hornblower Story, adapted from four of the C.S. Forrester novels by Val Gielgud, with Terence Skelton as William Bush. Part one from Lieutenant Hornblower, The Peculiar Captain.
While you're a midshipman in the service, you think little but of the time when you will be commissioned as lieutenant. Taking things all round, even including the seemingly interminable period during which I was captive of the Spaniards in Ferrol, I consider myself to have been fortunate. After only 3 years, I had my lieutenant's commission. It took me some time after my appointment to renown to realize that all captains were not like Captain Pellew, under whom I had served, that there might be disadvantages in finding myself a junior lieutenant in a ship of the line as compared with service in a frigate, and to understand just how much depended upon the quality and character of my fellow officers. As I recall, I was officer of the watch, with renown lying at anchor, when Lieutenant William Bush came aboard and reported himself. A brisk young man with very bright blue eyes, and an expression to which I took an instant liking.
Glad to have you aboard, sir. My name is Hornblower. The captain's ashore. First lieutenant went forward 10 minutes ago.
Thank you.
You there! Careful with those stores!
Aye, aye, sir.
You're busy, I see.
I'm making ready for long service in distant waters, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Bush. Hey! You with the stay tackles! Handsomely, handsomely, belay! Mr. Hobbs, keep an eye on what your men are doing there.
Aye, aye, sir.
Mr. Hobbs, lay aft here.
Something you want, sir?
Mr. Hobbs, that powder's got to come aboard before nightfall, and you know it. Don't use that sulky tone when replying to an order. Answer cheerfully. How are you going to get the men to work if you sulk? Now, get forward and see to it.
Aye, aye, sir.
Let them once start sulking, Mr. Bush, and you can't do anything with them. Hobbs is the worst of them. Acting gunner and no good. Lazy.
I see.
If you'll not take it amiss, what's the date of your commission?
July 96. And yours?
August 97. You're senior to me. Senior to Smith, too. His was January 97.
Which makes you the junior, Mr. Hornblower.
Yes. You'll be third, Smith fourth, and I'm fifth.
Third? Might be worse.
Only two lives between you and first, Mr. Bush. And first's added chances of promotion. Anyway, it's the West Indies for us. Yellow fever, ague, hurricanes, poisonous snakes, bad water, tropical heat, putrid fever and 10 times more chance of action than with the Channel Fleet.
That is so. Quite a good deal to look forward to, in fact.
Ah, Captain Sawyer's coming off now. And Mr. Hobbs, Captain's coming aboard. Run forward and inform Mr. Buckland.
Aye, aye, sir.
Side, boys. Step lively now.
Aye, sir. Aye, sir.
Step lively.
Captain Sawyer, Lieutenant William Bush, sir, reporting for duty.
Indeed, Mr. Bush. So you came aboard in my absence?
Yes, sir.
Who told you I was on shore?
Told me, sir.
Or did you guess it?
I didn't know you were on shore till Mr. Hornblower mentioned it.
Mr. Hornblower, you know each other already?
I reported to him when I came aboard, sir.
So that you could have a few private words without my knowledge?
No, sir.
And have you know, Mr. Bush, that I allow no one to conspire behind my back. No one. Is that clear?
Aye, aye, sir.
You wear guilt on your face, Mr. Bush. I'll remember this.
You'll need a couple of hands to carry your sea chest down, Mr. Bush. I'll see to it.
And you remember it too, Mr. Hornblower, if you please.
Aye, aye, sir. Follow me, if you please, Mr. Bush.
As Bush told me afterwards, he had felt a certain disquiet from that first interview with Captain Sawyer. A disquiet that deepened to apprehension and dismay as he grew conscious of the atmosphere of tension and fear, pervading Renown as she clawed her way across the bay on the first leg of her voyage to the West Indian station. 3 days at sea had been enough to tell him that of his colleagues, Buckland, the first lieutenant, who was capable and steady, Roberts, the second, kindly and easygoing, Smith, a trifle weak, and that the surgeon and the master and the purser all seemed somewhat secretive. This, coupled with the general atmosphere of unease, he put down to the curious and unpredictable moods of Captain Sawyer. Yet no one said a word to him about the latter, and Lieutenant Bush began to wonder if he was allowing imagination to warp his judgment. He was soon to find out. On the morning of the fourth day, Bush was on watch with a young boy volunteer called Wellard beside him. The wind was freshening towards a gale.
Mr. Wellard.
Aye, aye, sir.
Tell the captain I think another reef is necessary.
Aye, aye, sir. Captain's coming himself, sir.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Wellard.
So, you want to take in another reef, Mr. Bush?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Call all hands.
All hands! All hands to reef topsails!
Fast haulings there! Fast haulings!
Who is that countermanding my orders?
It's me, sir. Wellard.
So, it is you, sir, is it? You will be sorry, Mr. Wellard. Oh, yes, you will be sorry.
But sir,
there's a reef point caught in the reef tackle block, weatherside, sir. Go on hauling and they'll damage the sail.
What do you mean, Mr. Hornblower, by coming between me and a man who disobeys me? No, do not try to screen him.
This is my station, sir. Mr. Wellard was only doing his duty.
Then why were you absent from your station, Mr. Hornblower? Seasick as usual, I suppose.
Yes, sir.
And I'm also right in thinking you two are in collusion, conspiracy.
Oh, Captain Sawyer, no,
get
sir.
Below, both of you. I'll deal with you in a few moments. You hear me? Go below!
Yes, sir.
Now, Mr. Bush, send a hand to bear those backstays abreast the top brim.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hands to the weather braces!
Aye, aye, sir.
Haul together, men! Send for Mr. Lomax, if you please, Mr. Bush.
The purser, sir. Up here.
I do not care to have to repeat my orders, Mr. Bush. Ah, there you are, Mr. Lomax. You've taken your time.
I'm sorry, sir. I wasn't expecting...
You should always be expecting, Mr. Lomax. The hands have been hauling in the weather main brace. Now, we'll splice it.
Splice it, sir?
A tot of rum to every man and to every boy. I'll give you 5 minutes by my watch, no longer.
Aye, aye, sir.
Mr. Bush, I'll have the hands aft here, if you please.
All hands aft.
All hands up.
I know when I see loyalty, men. I saw it just now when I watched your unremitting toil. I noticed it, as I notice everything in this ship. Everything. Traitors meet their deserts, and loyal hearts get their reward. Now give a cheer, you men.
Hip, hip.
Ah, oh, glad to see you up to time, Mr. Lomax. See to it that the rum issue is made with none of the unfairness that goes on in some ships. Mr. Hobbs, come here.
Aye, sir.
You have your rattan with you, Mr. Hobbs?
Below, sir.
Fetch it. Pick the two sturdiest of your mates and follow me. We will pay a call upon Mr. Wellard. Mr. Bush, in the absence of Mr. Hornblower and Mr. Wellard from this station, you will be so good as to remain on duty.
Aye, aye, sir.
I'll see justice and discipline prevail aboard my ship.
Reporting for duty, sir.
Very good, Mr. Wellard. Much hurt?
Boys must be bitten, Mr. Bush. I know that. But if I said nothing...
I know. It's an unfair world. So I'll give you something to take your mind off it. Run those sand glasses against each other by the binnacle. Run the minute glass against the half-hour glass as soon as they turn it at 7 bells.
Aye, aye, sir.
And mark off each minute on the slate, unless you want to lose your reckoning.
Aye, aye, sir.
Ah, I see, Mr. Wellard. Is at work again, Mr. Bush?
Yes, sir.
Yes. And Mr. Wellard has learned better now, perhaps, than to conspire against this captain, set in authority over him by his gracious majesty, King George. Mr. Wellard, it seems, is dwelling in his mind on what lies behind him. I said behind him, Mr. Bush. By the waters of Babylon, we sat down and wept. But Mr. Wellard was proud. He did not weep. And he did not sit down. He was careful not to sit down. The dishonorable part of him has paid the price for his dishonor. A grown man guilty of an honorable offense is flogged upon his back. But a nasty-minded boy is treated differently, eh, Mr. Wellard?
You say so, sir.
Mr. Hobbs Kane did his work well. Bent over the gun, Mr. Wellard could consider of his misdeeds. So you chose to conspire against me, Mr. Wellard, with Mr. Hornblower. You sought to hold me up to derision before all hands.
Indeed not, sir.
You and Mr. Hornblower, you plotted and planned so that my lawful authority should be set at naught.
No, sir, no.
It is only the hands who are faithful to me in this ship. Everyone else conspires against me. You seek cunningly to undermine my influence. Confess it.
I did not, sir.
Why deny it? It's plain, it's logical. Who was it who planned to catch that reef point in the reef tackle block?
No one, sir.
Then who countermanded my orders? Who put me to shame before all hands on deck? Both watches. It was a deep-laid plot. You hide your face because of the guilt that is written on it, Mr. Wellard. You pretend to be busy.
I gave Mr. Wellard orders to test the glasses against each other, sir.
You did, Mr. Bush. You are sadly deceived if you believe that there is any good in this young fellow. Unless you are part and parcel of this infamous affair, Mr. Bush. I had thought better of you.
Thank you, sir.
With all the world against me, I've always thought I could count on you, Mr. Bush. You should rejoice when the embodiment of treachery gets his deserts.
Mr. Wellard knows nothing, sir. He hardly knows the bobstay from the spanker book.
No, Mr. Bush. You are too honest. You are ignorant of the wickedness of the world. This lout Wellard has deceived you. Grossly.
But really, sir...
I'll have it out of you. Justice must be done. Quartermaster! Run forward and tell Mr. Hobbs to lay aft here with his two mates.
Aye, aye, sir.
I'll have it out of him, or he'll jump overboard. You hear me, Mr. Bush?
Mr. Wellard hasn't finished testing the glasses, sir.
Nor will he.
You sent for me, sir?
I did, Mr. Hobbs. Take Mr. Wellard there below. Justice demands that he be dealt with further. another dozen from your cane, properly applied, and I'll warrant he'll coo like a dove.
Aye, aye, sir.
And what are you waiting for? Take him below to the main deck.
Aye, aye, sir.
I shall come with you, Mr. Hobbs. I wish to see my orders carried out. Ah, here comes Mr. Hornblower to relieve you, Mr. Bush.
You're not my release.
I am. Captain's orders.
But why?
I'm on watch and watch until further orders. No wardroom liquor either.
4 hours duty day and night. That's devilish hard luck. That poor lad Wellard. What in heaven's name is wrong with the captain? Tell me that.
I can't say. Not yet, anyway.
Nor could I. A hideous suspicion was forming in my mind, but as I saw it, it was not my business to put it into words. And besides, I had other things to occupy me. In particular, speculation as to the mission upon which Renown was plunging across the Atlantic, driven by the roaring trades. Only the Lords of the Admiralty and the Captain knew. That knowledge might mean life or death for us all. Nonetheless, Bush's question often recurred to me, and most vividly on the fourth Sunday of the month, when the worship of God was set aside for the formal reading by every ship's captain of the Articles of War. The crew stood bareheaded, facing to their front, and Captain Sawyer.
19th Article. If any person in or belonging to the fleet shall make or endeavour to make any mutinous assembly upon any offence whatsoever, every person offending therein and being convicted by the sentence of court-martial shall suffer death. And if any officer, mariner or soldier, or other person in the fleet shall presume to quarrel with any of his superior officers, or shall disobey any lawful command, every such person shall suffer death. I'll have you all know that these articles apply to my officers as much as to anyone else. Carry on, Mr. Buckland.
Aye, aye, sir. On hats, fifes and drums at the ready. By divisions, dismiss.
Shoulder, arms, by the left, quick, start.
Mr. Buckland.
Aye, aye, sir.
Rope yarn Sunday left, today. Left, double rum for these left, good men.
Left, aye, aye, left, sir.
See to it, then.
Mr. Roberts, Mr. Bush, a word with you, if you please.
Yes, Mr. Buckland.
This grows beyond a joke, gentlemen. Double rum again for the crew when half are idle and most are sulking. These articles apply to my officers. How do we keep discipline after that?
Where's Hornblower, Bush?
On the other side of the wheel with young Wellard.
It's a hard thing to say. The captain's mad.
Harder if anyone hears you say it, Mr. Buckland.
Could you speak to the surgeon, Mr. Buckland?
The surgeon, Mr. Bush, is a ninny. He'll not lift a finger. Too scared.
What was that?
The skylight of the captain's cabin. Must have been open an inch or two. If he was listening...
My God.
Don't move from where you are standing, gentlemen. Mr. Hobbs, you'll bear witness to evident signs of guilt. A pretty sight for one of His Majesty's post captains. Mutinous assembly.
No, sir.
So you give me the lie on my own quarterdeck. I was right to suspect you. Plotting, scheming, whispering in corners, my own officers. And now, treating me with gross disrespect. You'll regret this, Mr. Buckland.
No disrespect was intended, sir.
You give me the lie again to my face. And you others, stand by and abet him. I had thought better of you, Mr. Bush. Dumb insolence, eh? You were eager enough to talk when you thought my eye wasn't on you. Mr. Hornblower, I want you over here.
Aye, aye, sir.
You are officer of the watch, I believe, Mr. Hornblower.
Yes, sir.
And yet you do not see fit to report this assembly, this mutinous assembly, to me. The officer of the watch closes his eyes to it. Mr. Wellard, of course, is in the business too. That was only to be expected.
No, sir. No.
But I say yes, Mr. Hornblower. However, I will deal with Mr. Wellard later. I will deal with the lieutenants first, as their lofty rank dictates. Satan found mischief for your idle hands, Mr. Buckland. As the high and mighty first lieutenant, you are aspiring, no doubt, to higher things.
Sir,
I have the grace still to address me as sir. You surprise me, Mr. Buckland. But you will not escape the consequences of your action. Mr. Hornblower will stay on watch and watch. But Mr. Roberts and Mr. Bush will report to you when every watch is called, and at 2 bells, at 4 bells, and at 6 bells in every watch. They will be properly dressed when they report, and you are to be properly awake. Understood? Answer me!
Yes, sir.
Aye, sir.
Make no mistake. I shall have means of knowing if I am obeyed or not.
Aye, sir.
So Buckland, Roberts, and Bush had been condemned by the captain to be awakened every hour, day and night. It was not to be borne. And at 2 bells in the middle watch, when Bush and Roberts had reported to Buckland in his cabin, a whispered appointment had been made for the three to meet later in the darkness of the hold. When Smith relieved me on watch, I went down to join them in that pitchy blackness 3 decks down, where rats squeaked and scuttered, and the fabric of the ship grumbled to itself with the alternating stresses of pitch and roll.
Ah, Mr. Hornblower, then we're all here.
We mustn't be here for long. We could hang for what we're doing.
None of that, Mr. Roberts. I suggest we declare the captain unfit for command. Suppose we put him in irons.
You need to do it quick and sharp. He'll call on the hands. They might follow him and then...
We swing at the yardarm.
If we put him in irons, what then?
We go on to Antigua.
And a court-martial?
Yes.
Captain Sawyer will give evidence. It'll sound different in court.
Surely they'll only have to look at him.
He's cunning, Mr. Bush. It's not as if he was a raving lunatic. He can talk, find reasons for everything he's done. You've heard him.
He's held us up to contempt before the hands. He's set Hobbs to spy on us.
Proof of how desperate he conceived his situation, Roberts. If we arrest him, we are guilty until we've proved ourselves innocent. The court's bound to be on the captain's side. And mutiny means hanging.
You're right.
What about young Wellard? You all heard him scream.
Wellard's a volunteer, not even a midshipman. No family. What's a court going to say when they hear that the captain had a boy beaten 6 times? They'll laugh. 22 years I've held my commission. Now he'll break me. He'll break the rest of you as well.
A fine prospect, Mr. Buckland. Dismissal from the service, prison, or the rope.
How long before we make Antigua?
Well, it's only our guess that Antigua's our destination, Mr. Bush. Antigua 10 days. Otherwise, might be weeks, might be months.
Then God help us.
Mr. Buckland, Mr. Hornblower, sir.
That's Wellard. In here, boy.
It's the captain, Mr. Buckland. He's coming.
Which way?
Steerage hatchway. I got to the cockpit and came down from there. He was sending
me. Get forward, you three. And scatter when you're on deck. Quickly now.
Right.
Come along, Wellard. You come with me.
Cable tier, ladder, lower gun deck. Light at last. Buckland and Roberts went to the main deck. Bush made his way aft. By the mainmast, he arrived in the midst of a scene of extraordinary bustle. Here the Marines were berthed, and Bush found them out of their hammocks and putting on their crossbelts ready for action.
What's all this about, Sergeant?
Captain's orders, Mr. Bush. Told to turn out. Muskets, sidearms, and ball cartridge.
Where is the captain, then?
Aft somewhere, sir. Sent for the corporal's guard, same time as we was told to turn out.
Very well, Sergeant.
Stand fast there. Stand fast!
Pass the word for the doctor. Pass the word there.
What in hell's that?
Pass the word for the doctor. Call Dr. Klein.
Who's hurt, Willard?
The captain, Mr. Bush.
The captain?
Yes, sir.
Then get Dr. Clive yourself. Run, and ask Mr. Buckland to come here.
Aye, sir.
You can keep your Marines formed up, Sergeant, but I do not think there's any emergency.
Captain Sawyer is badly hurt, I fear, Mr. Bush. He has fallen down the hatchway.
Silence in the ranks there!
Captain's down there, Mr. Hornblower. Bottom of the hatch ladder, unconscious. 2 men with him, sir.
What in damnation's going on, Mr. Hornblower?
The captain's hurt, Mr. Buckland.
Corporal, tell the First Lieutenant all you know about this.
Speak up, man!
Corporal of the Guard, sir. I was woke by the gunner, Mr. Hobbs. He said Captain's orders were to turn out the guard. So I did, sir. There was the Captain with the new sentry I posted. He had pistols in his hands.
The Captain? Pistols?
Aye, sir. He tells Mr. Hobbs to do his duty and orders us to come down here with him. Said there was mutiny brewing. Black bloody mutiny, he said, sir, and we to catch the mutineers red-handed.
Well, carry on, Corporal.
Well, sir, the Captain was yelling like, stop every bolt hole, search, don't let him escape, he said, shouting at us.
And then? Come along, Corporal, just tell the truth.
I don't know exactly what happened, sir.
Tell us what you know.
I left the Captain to search as he'd ordered. I'd hardly gone 10 yards when I heard a yell, then a crash. So I came back with a lantern, and there was the Captain lying at the foot of the ladder. He'd fallen down the hatchway, his face all bloody like stunned, sir. I thought he might be dead till I felt his heart.
And you've no idea, Corporal, how the Captain came to fall down the hatchway?
No, indeed, Mr. Hornblower.
But you say he was excited.
Well, sir, he was yelling after us down the hatchway, so I judge he was leaning over. If the ship pitched and he'd caught a foot in the combing, he could have fallen head first.
I imagine that's what must have happened, Mr. Buckland. I'll take the Corporal's statement in writing now. There's no more we can do till we get the surgeon's report. Mm.
Very good, Mr. Hornblower. Carry on.
It's been a bad long night for all of us. Take your time, Mr. Clive. How is he?
Skull intact, Mr. Buckland. Nose broken. Extensive scalp lacerations. Clavicle and 2 ribs broken. Severe concussion.
Does he know where he is?
He knows he's in this ship.
The point is this, Mr. Clive. Is the Captain fit for duty?
Temporarily, well, perhaps not.
Do you mean that he is incapable at present of commanding the ship?
At present, yes.
Then we know where we stand, Mr. Buckland. You take over the command.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. But we must all realize the desperate importance of depriving a captain of his command.
I have the corporal's signed statement here, Mr. Buckland.
Thank you.
You will convey the news to all hands.
In due course, Mr. Hornblower. I must have a little time to think. Meanwhile, I hope we shall all go on doing our duty.
Of course, sir.
Do you think he'll face up to it?
I think so, Mr. Bush. It's a hard decision to take. If an inquiry finds that Mr. Buckland was wrong...
We all know the man's mind was unstable. With injuries from a fall like his, the result must be...
Might be. Madness, incapacity to command. On the other hand, Mr. Buckland could face the end of his professional career.
But how did it happen?
Did what happen?
How did the Captain come to fall down the hatchway?
I fancy he must have overbalanced, Mr. Bush. You will excuse me, I have duties to attend to on deck.
Buckland might take time to make up his mind, but I felt that he had no choice. With Captain Sawyer under an opiate, when he was not screaming in a delirium, the First Lieutenant must surely proclaim himself in command of renown, Captain Sawyer being quite incapable after his accident. In which case, it would fall to Buckland to open those sealed orders from the Admiralty, which lay among the Captain's papers. With their opening, we might all hope to know what mission was intended for us at Antigua and beyond. We could only wait and see.
In part one of Lieutenant Hornblower, you heard Nigel Anthony in the title role and as the narrator, with Terence Skelton as William Bush. The part of Captain Sawyer was played by John Pickles, Mr. Hobbs, Colin Bean, Wellard the Boy, Mark Hudson, Mr. Lomax, Gordon Astley, Mr. Buckland, David Peart, Mr. Roberts, Paul Hertzberg, Mr. Clive, John Jardine, and Corporal of Marines, John Baldwin. The musical score is composed by Johnny Pearson. The Hornblower Story is directed in Manchester by Trevor Hill, assisted by Christopher Hayton Webb.
Quite a precarious situation Horatio finds himself in. I think we'll have to run part two of this story next month so we can find out what happens. But that's all we have time for today. Remember to join us over at the forums at journeyinto.freeforums.org to comment on this story. There's only been a handful of people that have commented on the stories. I enjoy each comment I get, so please head on over. Of course, I'd always appreciate a donation. If you'd like to donate to the podcast and allow me to purchase other stories and to possibly attract great authors with more compensation for their works, you can donate if you go to journeyintopodcast.blogspot.com. And you could also submit stories over to us. And the submission guidelines are found on that site as well. Just look at the labels on the right-hand side of the screen. Have a great week, and until I talk to you again, journey on, Space Vulture. The Journey Into podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, which claims that you cannot sell this audio and you cannot change it, but you're more than welcome to share it. The theme music for this podcast is provided by Man in Space.